For the most part, we act as if our happiness depends on changing the world and people around us. We feel, if only he or she would act differently towards me, I would be happy. If only I had more money or weighed less, I would be happy. If only my childhood was not so dysfunctional, or my life would be perfect if only wars, poverty, rape, and social injustice did not exist. How may we transform our everyday conflicts and lifelong traumas into peace and understanding? Here to help us take a deep look into this question is Byron Katie, who has taught thousands of people around the world a way to solve problems with a simple method called the work. The work consists of four seemingly simple questions. Byron Katie, along with her husband, best-selling author Stephen Mitchell, are co-authors of Loving What Is, Four Questions That Can Change Your Life. She says for people who have tried everything and nothing else works, the last place to look is inside. Join us for the next hour as we explore four questions to inner peace with our guest, Byron Katie. My name is Justine Willis-Toms. I'll be your host. Welcome to New Dimensions. Katie, may I call you Katie?
Absolutely.
Welcome to New Dimensions.
Thank you.
I'd like to go back. I know that you weren't born knowing the work.
No, but
how did that come to you? When did you first discover the wisdom of what you call the work?
Well, my life was so full of pain. For more than a decade, I was extremely depressed, often unable to leave my bedroom, even my bed. I was so full of rage that often my children were even afraid of me. And one day, you know, first I can tell you my life had all of the, you know, I should be happy. I had plenty of money. My three children were healthy, had a beautiful home. And yet inside, I was dying. Every day I wanted to die. But then one day, actually, I was in a halfway house, and I was sleeping.
How did you get there?
It is what my insurance company could afford. I didn't have religion. I'd never had therapy. All I knew was that something had to give. Every day, I wanted to die.
So you, just to understand the story a little bit, you had all these material advantages.
Yes.
Your children were healthy and
yes.
strong, and
yes.
yet there was something nagging at you that caused you to just turn away from all of that?
I was paranoid. I was agoraphobic. I was so depressed, you know, and there was no way out. There was no way out. And then one particular morning, I was lying in an attic on the floor because my self-esteem was so low, that's the only place I thought I deserved to sleep, on a floor. So I did that night after night as just a course in my everyday living. But this particular morning, as I lay sleeping, a cockroach actually crawled over my foot and I opened my eyes. And I guess from the immediacy of it or whatever, just in that moment, in place of all the depression and the hopelessness was a world that I had never, no one told me existed. I thought you had to die to be that free. And it was, in place of all the darkness, was just absolute delight and peace. And I saw in that moment that when I believed my thoughts, I suffered. But when I questioned my thoughts, I didn't suffer. And I've come to see that this is true for every human being.
So what happened after that when you felt this in that moment, but you still did a lot of thinking or retreat or working?
Well, I came to see that I wasn't doing it. In that moment, I saw I was being breathed, that I was doing nothing for it.
So it's like you saw the mountaintop for a moment.
And then I saw that I was being thought. I wasn't thinking. We love to say, oh, I thought this, I thought that. And I saw that thoughts just, they just, you know, they're like breath. They come in, they go out. And as I saw what wasn't true, it was as though I was meeting a friend with every thought. And then I noticed that as people in my life would say certain things, that whether they thought it or I thought it, what's the difference? So thoughts are friends. They're not enemies. Once we question them, the power of any enemy disappears. And what's left is the ability and strength and energy to create, to move as you might say, co-creator. There's nothing we can't do or accomplish. We're just stuck in what we believe. So we move like ancients.
So I'm thinking of two ideas about thoughts. Either we want to get rid of them.
It doesn't work.
And the second one is we don't even realize we have them or they're running us.
Yes.
So can you talk about those of us when we want to just get rid of a thought?
Well, you know, that doesn't work. It just doesn't work.
Well, explain that. Give me an example.
We say, well, I don't want to think the thought red. Well, we even picture it. I don't want to think it. I don't want to think it. Well, we even picture it again. We continue to think it. And then if we don't, we have the thought, oh, I did that. I can control my thoughts. And yet again, eventually we think the word red. There's nothing we can do about it. That's why I say I noticed I was being thought. So if I cannot experience stress without attaching to a thought, in other words, believing what I think. So I work with stressful thoughts. I don't work with thoughts that bring peace, that bring a sense of joy and wholeness and balance. Why would I do that? That's what we create out of. That's where we are at our best, our freest. So I work with stressful thoughts. I invite people to question their stressful thoughts, because once those are questioned, the next time they come into, we could say, apparent existence, we don't believe them. Therefore, they come as friends. In fact, the next time they come, people experience laughter where depression used to live as an effect of that thought they were believing.
So you're saying that these are stressful thoughts and they come in like friends. Now that seems like a paradox.
Well, they're stressful thoughts, so they come in as enemies. You question them, then the next time they come in place of the stress, you experience laughter.
Oh.
Or like a very good friend, you know, a good friends you take for granted, you both do. You're just so comfortable together. So the thought, rather than laughter, the next time it comes in, you may not even notice. You just take it for granted, but there's nothing to move you from what you know to do in your life.
So as you're learning this, as you first recognize it as stress, as a kind of the enemy coming in and providing, or you go into stress, then you're saying
question it,
and maybe the next time it comes up, you're amused.
Absolutely. That's it.
So there's humor.
Yes. And until we question those stressful thoughts, they come in, and we really think that people are causing the stress, that the situation is causing the stress. People don't even understand that it's what they're believing that's causing the stress. They really think it is the apparent material world.
Well, exactly. I mean, this is a hard one. I mean, even those who have done lots of the inner work and who have meditated for years, mm-hmm. you're saying that this is still present.
Because it is.
It is.
It is, you know, and we question what we believe. And, you know, that is meditation. That is meditation. But it invites what we are thinking. It's inviting it and examining it, you know, questioning it to see if, you know, what is this thought? What is the meaning of this thought? And that's what these four questions do.
So let's talk about the four questions.
Okay.
What would be if a stressful thought comes up and I happen to notice that I'm in stress. Most of the time we don't, but I do.
There was one that comes to mind. I was speaking with a woman earlier today about this hostage, on the torture, the pictures, mm-hmm. on the situation that we're experiencing now
in Iraq. Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. And the concept came up, life isn't fair. And so I said, you know, let's question that. So the first question, life isn't fair. The first question, is that true? Life isn't fair. Is that true? Is it true? And then to sit with that. And if the answer is no, then where did that no come from? That's just to double check your integrity. So the second question, life isn't fair. Can you absolutely know that that's true, that life isn't fair? And to sit with that, again, this is meditation. Ourself, that's the last place we look. So that's what this work is about. So life isn't fair. The third question, how do you react when you think that thought? And to start with your closest self, you know, what feelings come with that? And where do you feel it? And how do you feel it? And then to open to that and experience it and to watch how that can take you over. How do you react when you think that thought, life isn't fair? Then when you get your feelings down and you're aware of those, then you move into how do you treat yourself when you think that thought and you believe it? How do you treat other people when you think that thought and believe it? You know, it's as though nature or some God or some circumstance is stacked against us and we're at the bottom of the heap. You know, that implies that the whole world is to be feared. So how do you react when you think that thought? And then the mind has a job. If it's not resting in the truth, because that is its nature, if it's not resting in its truth, its job is to find it. So what it does is it finds every reason within its capacity to do so, to believe what it thinks. Its whole life is about that. There's no rest for it. Life isn't fair. So the mind begins to call up all of the circumstances to prove it. There's no rest for it.
I think that you've used the word, the mind is a spin doctor.
It is.
That it spins, the thought That's comes up and it starts to spin it around.
It's proving that what it thinks is true. Otherwise, it has no life. So it's really looking for a home, I like to say. So then, life isn't fair. The fourth question, who would you be without that thought? Who or what would you be without that thought? Just living your life, just living in the world, if you did not believe that. And it's a marvelous question. You know, something would happen and you would see it, notice the reality of it, and move into, how can I make this better? How can I serve? What can I do to help? Rather than living out of stress and fear, it's not efficient.
When we come back, I'd like to try something with you, with one of maybe not so big a question as life isn't fair, but maybe
well,
bring it down.
They're all big. I say all stressful thoughts are equal.
I'm here with Byron Katie. She's the author of Loving What Is. My name is Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Byron Katie, and we're talking about the question, life isn't fair, the stressful question, and how we can use the work, the four questions that she's developed as in a way to be stress-free and to live in our natural self.
Yes.
There is another step before we go into a process that I've brought. There's another step. Besides the four questions, and what is that step?
I call it the turnaround to see what is as true or truer. And let's say life isn't fair. Now that we're educated, now that the person using these four questions has educated themselves, it's like ending their own ignorance. And that's what I have done. And I'm open. I'm open. But the turnaround, that's what's next. So we have questioned what we believe, and the turnaround, life isn't fair. Turned around, life is fair. Now, just sit with that and see if you can find where that's true. Three ways that that's true. And then another turnaround is, I'm not fair. Where is it that I'm not fair in my life? And just to sit in that and see, you know, you can look back in the last hour and see where you were not fair. Look back in your life and see, where is it that you are not fair? Because that is the source of our pain. It's not what you do to me that causes me pain. It is what I do to you that causes my pain. What I do is the only way I can suffer. What you do to me, my unquestioned thoughts about that, that's my suffering, not you. So you're my perceived enemy, and as long as I believe that, I have to live out of that delusional thought.
Now, I can hear our listeners saying, yeah, but what if I attack you? What if I hit you?
I love that. Here is mercy. You walk up to me, you slap my face, guess what? It's over. It's over. Is that grace? It's over. But look what the mind does. How dare you? It's not fair. It's not right. Well, you know, we forget the grace of the moment. It's over. How kind is reality? I like to say reality is always kinder than the story we superimpose upon it.
Great. I can see a little bit of glimmer into that. Let's try something I know that you like for us to write something down, and that's what you instruct in your book and on your website. Mm-hmm. Your website is thework.org.
Thework.com, thework.org, okay. Loving what is, it'll all get you there.
All right. And so I downloaded just a sheet from there.
Great.
And so you have us fill out a few things, mm-hmm. like who angers, confuses, saddens, or disappoints you and why? What is it about them you don't like?
Mm-hmm.
So what I wrote was, I'm upset because Michael, my partner, is impatient with me about being slow to leave the house.
Okay, so I would break that down. Okay, so your partner is impatient with you.
Yes.
We'll use the first part
okay.
of that. Is that true? Can
yes.
you absolutely know that that's true?
Yes.
Okay, now that was this morning. He's impatient with you.
Well, he actually wasn't this morning, but...
okay, so but... in this moment, is that true?
No. Can you... no.
No.
In this moment, he's not impatient with me.
No, or maybe he is. It's just, can yeah. you absolutely know that it's true? It's like in this moment, let's say you're stressed out. So your partner is impatient with you. Can you absolutely know that that's true?
Well, no. In this moment, I don't know that that's absolutely true.
Yeah. So how do you react when you think that thought?
Well, it gets me back into it, into the moment. I can see it gets me back into the past, and it gets me in trouble when I think it's going to come up again, when we're in that situation that we're leaving the house.
Yes.
I
project it.
I do. I start yeah. getting tense about it.
Yeah.
I know it's coming.
And how do you treat him when you think that thought and you're projecting that it's going to happen
yeah.
again?
Yeah.
You know, we snap.
Well, I want to change him, you know. I want it to be different. I want him to appreciate all that I do about leaving. And we're talking about, like, going on a trip
yeah.
and shutting down the house and feeding the cat and making mm-hmm. sure that everything's set up and the plants mm-hmm. and all of that.
And you're carrying that with you. He's impatient with me.
Right. While I'm doing that,
yes.
that, oh, we're going to have to leave soon, and I'm not finished, and my time isn't right, and I haven't done all of this, and mm-hmm. I misjudge my time.
Yeah.
So I'm getting tense.
You're becoming impatient.
Yeah.
So who would you be packing, taking care of the cat, shutting the house up without the thought Michael is impatient with me?
I would be shutting down the house and just being there and doing it.
More thoughtful?
Yes. No, I wouldn't be in so much stress. That's
yes.
true.
Yes, more efficient.
And even if he got impatient, it doesn't matter, huh?
No.
Is that what you're saying?
That's exactly so. Because you're trusting the reality of the moment.
Right.
He'll let me know when he's impatient. Why would I project it? You know, it's enough when he lets me know. I'll deal with it then.
It's true. We do go round and round. Yeah. Yeah.
So blaming him for what he hasn't done yet.
You bet.
So, you know, that seems to be the human way until we really question our thoughts.
Right.
So Michael is impatient with you. Turn it around.
I'm impatient with him.
Yes.
Okay, let me just feel that for a moment. I'm impatient with him. Right, I'm impatient with his impatience.
Yes, very good. That's exactly so.
Right, I don't let him blink an eye.
Yes, so
doesn't eye blink, I'm impatient with it.
Yes, so your impatience is your pain.
Yeah.
And he's just packing.
Right.
Okay, so can you see another turnaround?
Okay, let's see.
Michael is impatient with me.
I am impatient with Michael.
Okay,
yeah.
We did that one.
Okay, now, another one. Let's see, another one. Help me with this
okay.
one. Help
me. I'm impatient with?
I am impatient with myself.
Yes. Look how you are rushing you in his name.
Oh, yes. Okay.
And that's innocence. If you know, when you realize that it's you rushing you, there's a little laughter, you slow down, the efficiency's back into place, and you're enjoying and loving what you do, loving what is. And there's another turnaround. Michael is impatient with me. Michael is not.
Impatient with me.
Yes.
That's the other turnaround.
And I would test that one. You know, I'm packing, and I just stop, and I say, honey, are you impatient?
Oh, check it out.
Check it out.
He would appreciate that, I'm sure.
Yeah. And he might say yes. And you might say, well, you know, I had the thought you might be.
Yeah. So you check out the reality of that.
Yeah. And I'm doing the best that I can.
Right. That would really, I can see what you're saying because we get out of the moment and we get projected into what has happened in the past that becomes this whole reality.
Yes.
And it's tense.
Justine, I tell you, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Because, you know, we become impatient with them.
Yes.
In other words, like you said, we're impatient at their impatience. And so they look at us and we give them the look.
Yes.
And they're innocent.
Yes.
And so then they react to that. And then we project that as impatience. And it's all coming out of us.
But we want to change each other so much. It's so big.
Well,
I mean, it's the other person's fault.
You know,
if they just did this,
that is
everything
blindness.
Would be great.
That is blindness. If I turn it around, if I just do this, everything is great. And that leaves only one person to work with in the world, and that's me. And, you know, I can handle that.
Well, I know. It's the only thing I can handle is me.
And it's enough to handle.
But I want to handle everybody else.
Well, when you handle yourself, when you question what you believe and you work on yourself, then you see out of those revelations, you see out of those insights, out of that enlightenment. And the mind, because it's been questioned, continues to project what it believes. So the world becomes kinder and kinder and kinder as you become kinder.
Hmm.
Nothing else is possible. Look at us. We're still doing war.
Well, let's go into that just a little bit because a lot of people are very concerned about the state of the world and terrorism and war. And it's a very tense sort of beingness, and people are very angry about it, and they're angry about, let's say, our government or someone else's government or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
And talk about that as how it will bring about peace.
Okay, so where You know, let's look at you again.
Okay.
Hacking.
Okay.
You have a government running there. You're the judge, the jury. You have a whole government, a whole system running there. Okay, where are you being abusive to yourself and others? Where are you torturing you? Where are you torturing Michael? To what extent, you know?
Right.
And that would be your own personal, you know, experience of that. And you deal with that. That's how to end torture in the world. That's how to end attack in the world.
So it's bringing it back to where we do have choice.
It's all you can do in this moment is take care of one torturer.
Right.
You know, and that's huge. That is huge. Look what's happening in our own households. You know, someone maybe will say Michael's just laid back, having a wonderful moment, and you're projecting him as this enemy wanting you to... You're projecting that he's impatient.
Oh, I've done it.
Okay.
I've done it. He'll be sitting there in a chair waiting for me, and I'm just assuming.
And you could have the thought, he is torturing me. It is torture to live with this man. Okay, you know, it's torture to live with myself. I don't even know in this moment whether he is impatient or not. What I know is I am with myself, with Michael, and he's innocent. And if I want to check that out, I'll ask Michael, honey, are you impatient with me? And the worst can happen is he would say yes, and you could both have a good laugh. Like, what can we do then?
Yeah.
How can I help you?
How can I help you? And here's the reality of the situation.
Yeah.
We are late, and I misjudge my time. So what can we do now?
Yes.
And we laugh, and there's kindness in
there. Yes, and that's the end of that kind of government. The dictator, the dictatorship, the torturer. It's the end of it. It's the end of it. So then when we've taken care of that, when we're watching television and we hear these things, we can watch it fearlessly. We can find solutions. We can write our congressman. We can do all kinds of action. And I am going to do that when I have peace in my life. And it happens that I do, and so I am more effective as I live that out.
Excellent. I'm here with Byron Katie. She's a co-author with Stephen Mitchell of Loving What Is. My name is Justine Willis-Toms. You're listening to New Dimensions. I'm here with Byron Katie, and we've been joined by Jeffrey. And I asked Jeffrey to come in and to work with Byron, or Katie as she's called, to see, is this really as simple as what it seems to be? So this is another demonstration. So I haven't heard Jeffrey's thoughts of what's your dilemma right now. So, and neither has Katie. So maybe let's just go into it and see what happens.
We recently moved and bought a house not far from here, and the neighbors, there are no fences, and the neighbor's property, the back looks at our front, more or less, and they have some hunting dogs in kennels, which are very bored and love to bark at the drop of a hat. And because we haven't met the neighbors, we cast a lot of scowls and such. So we've got these dogs who walk out of the house, and they start howling, four or five of them. And my wife and I, it's quite irritating.
Yeah.
Cast all these evil looks.
Yeah. Yeah. So what are your thoughts about the dogs? What are your thoughts about the neighbors?
Well, to take an extreme stance, it's like that they're irresponsible. They have too many dogs. They don't take care of them.
Yes.
There's no concern for their neighbors because the dogs react.
That's the one, isn't
it?
There's
right.
no concern. They're mm-hmm. they're not respectful.
Right.
Okay. Yeah. So they're not concerned with their neighbors. Jeffrey, is that true? Can you absolutely know that it's true, that they're not concerned
absolutely
about their neighbors?
Not. No, I have no idea that that's true. So, it only feels like that from our vantage point.
It has to feel that way because you believe it. That's why we're taking a look at it.
Right.
So how do you react when you think that thought, they have no concern for the neighbors? I've heard you give them the look.
Yes.
Number one. How do you react physically when you think the thought, they have no...
I think I certainly tighten up.
Yeah.
And I try and understand that the dogs are bored and there's suddenly something to bark at or just to communicate with. But it's also...
I like to say, and when that doesn't work.
Yeah, right. It's like, let's see.
So you feel it. Where do you feel that? They have no concern for their neighbors. Where does that thought hit you?
Right in the center of my body. Just I tighten up.
Yeah.
And
how far does that feeling travel? Just be with it a moment. Travel with it. They have no concern for their neighbors, and feel what it feels like to think that thought.
I think it feels heavy, feels tight, and certainly not good.
Yeah. Now, there's an interesting thing with the mind. It's looking, I say, looking for a home, looking for a solution, a resolution. Okay, so it has to annihilate your neighbor. It has to tear them to shreds, and then it has to curve around and attack you. It's like guilt for mentally attacking your neighbors. So it attacks the neighbor, it attacks you, and the mind is just spinning in its attack to find some peace, some resolution with this thing. And in the meantime, you're feeling all of that turmoil. That's how an untrue thought hits you. You know, the I know mind is a very, very painful thing to live out of because it's limited. So the fourth question, who would you be without the thought they are not concerned about the neighbors? My neighbors are not concerned about their neighbors. Who would you be walking out your door looking at the dogs without the thought my neighbors are not concerned?
I think I'd be lighter and freer, less concerned.
About the neighbors.
Yeah, yes, absolutely.
Yeah, that you would see them as less as an enemy, maybe. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And that could allow you to walk over there with maybe some gift, introduce yourself, and see, in fact, what kind of people they are, and see if maybe something can be worked out. But you know... You don't mind the dogs. You know how I know? You haven't moved.
Right.
You haven't even approached the neighbors to see if there's a solution.
Right.
But what we experience is this attack, this lack of concern about our neighbors. And here's the lack of concern. We mentally tell all these stories about them, and we haven't even met them yet. So it's a lack of concern to really just tear them to shreds with no knowledge, with no proof other than barking dogs. And, you know, the dogs were there before you were.
Right.
And so it's really painful walking out your door because that hits you. And it's like, what are your thoughts about that?
Of them being there before us?
Uh-huh. Like I should have checked it out better before I moved in, what?
I think we had a hint of that before we moved in.
What was the hint, Jeffrey?
That the previous owner had mentioned just before we took possession that sometimes the dogs are noisy.
Oh, ho, ho, ho.
But in the end, I don't think I would have changed. I don't think I would have done anything differently.
Very good. Yeah. Okay, so that tells me basically it's okay with you. So what I would do is write down everything about these neighbors, that all these thoughts that come, and then walk over and test them. Mm-hmm. And who knows? You could be right. And who knows? You haven't even met them. You know, they are the person, I would say they're the person of your dreams so far.
There's negative dream.
There's no reality to your story about them until you
I have to say something here. It's so amazing because yesterday we had a conversation, Jeffrey, about barking dogs and how much we enjoyed the dogs across the street from the office.
Yes.
This truck drives up and there are dogs in the back and there's a dog across the street from our office. Mm-hmm. And they just go at it and bark. And you and I were talking about, aren't they funny and cute?
And they're so excited.
And they're so excited.
And I'm really getting this from you. That's how I know, you know, it really basically is okay with you. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I'm very excited over the concept you gave. They're not treating their dogs properly, or they don't take good care of their dogs, something like that. Mm-hmm. You know, as you take a look at that and you get to know your neighbors, then you get to take care of them in a way that they haven't been taken care of, and there's nothing dearer than that.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
right.
They become like yours in a way. Who knows the possibilities?
Right.
And what an amazing thing to have dogs that alert you if someone is on your property. And at this point, you don't have to care for them or feed them. Look at what kind neighbors are those.
Run the deer off.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So when we're locked in these ideas, we're limited to the rest of the world. You know, Jeffrey, we cannot see what we don't believe. What a limited world we live in until we question our concepts.
Mm-hmm.
An unquestioned mind is the only possibility of suffering. Barking dogs never did that. They don't have the capacity. Our thoughts about the barking dogs, our unquestioned thoughts about the barking dogs, that's what's painful. You know, barking dogs, the sound of God, who could oppose that?
Right.
You know, what is
mm-hmm.
what is. And you know, what is always the story of a past. And what I love about the past is it's over. There are no barking dogs here now. But our mind, you know, we just keep barking and barking and barking about the dogs, about the neighbors. You know, so let me deal with my own barking.
So what's the turnaround then?
So they don't care about their neighbors. Turned around, I don't care about them. I'm the one not caring about my neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
Look how I think of them. Look at how what my mind does to keep them in a position of my enemy, and I haven't met them yet. My neighbors don't. They don't care about their neighbors. Another turnaround is they do care about their neighbors. And then we try to find three ways where they do care. And again, they are keeping the deer off and find two other things. You know, for one thing, you like the sound of barking dogs. Sometimes.
When they feel happy, maybe you hit on it. When these dogs don't feel happy to you, is that?
Right. I think that If I turn it around in my own mind that they're not doing it to me, they're just doing it out of the sheer joy of that's their voice.
Yeah.
Then
that's their job. Their job is to bark.
Right. And I think that's easier for me to, much easier for me to accept.
Yeah.
Well, I think that you really bring up a good point, though, because noise is a hard one in any kind of community living because it's so invasive and we really get on that it starts to run our minds all the time, and I can feel it.
You know, we work with our minds. There's no freedom until we do. You know, this unkind to animals thing. I know I'm going to San Quentin in a few days, and it's not unusual that I visit there lately.
And some people don't know what San Quentin is.
A prison.
Yes.
I go into the maximum security and work with lifers that are in there, and they've committed some very interesting crimes. And the cells that they live in are illegal, that space for a German Shepherd to be caged in, and there are two men in the space. And the screams that, you know, when they're shut in there, and the screams, because they don't know how to deal with their mind, there is no way out. And screaming just doesn't get it. It can bring more punishment, in fact, especially when maybe you're only out an hour out of 24. And we learn to deal with our minds, but I can tell you truly, the pain that they feel there and the pain that we experience when we hear barking dogs, it can be the same. I tell you truly, there is no way out in that moment short of questioning our mind. It's for all of us to find our own way out of prison, not to wait for the world to change or the neighbors to change or the dogs to be still so that I can be still. You know, there's no responsibility in it. The answers, you know, we've heard the answers are inside, and we meditate and we're still. But through these four questions, we just don't have to wait anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, we can do it any time, and that's our responsibility, self-responsibility.
Thank you, Jeffrey, for being with us. Speaking with Byron Katie and Jeffrey, and you're listening to New Dimensions. My name is Justine Willis-Toms. I've asked Susan to join Katie and myself, and Susan, as another demonstration of the simplicity of these questions for seemingly complex issues, Susan, what have you written there?
I've written that I'm angry with my mother because she's not a strong person and because she's not trustworthy, and she also has my whole life acted as if she's much smarter than myself or my two sisters.
Yes.
And so the anger and resentment has just really built up over the years.
Yes. So continue to read what you've written.
People can pull this
from the website.
I want my mom to honor her children. I want her to feel proud of us. I want her to be stronger in character so that she can be a good mentor.
Yes.
My mom shouldn't pit her daughters against each other. She should praise her daughters instead of making them feel dumb.
Yes.
She should be an example by making firm decisions in her life.
Yes, absolutely. I'm sure that there are many people that can relate to this. Would you continue? That's what the mind does. It just goes on and on.
Oh, boy, I said, I need my mom to be proud of her girls and to show that she is a strong person.
Good.
I feel that my mom is weak, two-faced, snobbish, and untrustworthy.
Yes. And the last one?
I don't ever want to be told that I'm lazy or not smart.
Good. Okay. So Susan, start at the top again. You know, I wanted you to read the whole thing because you think what so many people think. And, you know, we get people to agree with us and we call them friends. And if people oppose what we believe, we just find someone else. They're certainly not our friends. So, you know, friends are two people who agree. So it can be a very limiting world. So begin to read again at the top.
I am angry at my mom because she is not a strong person and because she's not trustworthy.
So let's break it down. Your mom is not a strong person. Is that true?
Yes. mom? Yes, okay, that's true.
That's okay. So your mom is not a strong person. Can you absolutely know that that's true, that she is not a strong person?
Yes.
That's okay. So how do you react when you think that thought, my mom is not a strong person?
I feel really sad inside.
And where does that sadness hit you?
It starts way down and builds up.
Yeah.
It starts down in the pit of my abdomen and just builds up towards my heart.
Yes, honey. And when you just sit with that and see how far that feeling travels, it can really take over your whole being.
It does. It's like a cellular expansion.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So your mom is not strong. How do you treat her? How do you react when you think that thought, she is not strong?
I don't want to be around her.
So you isolate from her? You
yes.
separate from her?
I ignore her.
You ignore her?
Yes.
Okay. How does it feel to ignore someone you love?
Well, you know, my feelings of her not being strong are so intense that it's hard for me to really know if I love her.
Mm-hmm. So who would you be just hanging out with your mother? Who would you be if you could not think that thought? Who would you be without the thought, my mom is not strong?
Oh, I'd feel stronger.
Yeah, you would feel stronger.
I would feel much stronger.
Yeah. My mom is not strong. Turn it around.
I'm not strong.
So tell me three ways where you're not strong, especially around your mother. Where are you not strong?
I'm not strong in loving her.
Yes.
I'm not strong in accepting her.
Yes, honey.
And I'm not strong in my ability to detach from my thoughts about her.
Yeah. Okay. So my mother is not strong. Can you see another turnaround?
That's a hard one.
Try my mother is.
My mother is... Oh, my mother is...
Strong.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's just not flowing out of my mouth.
No, because it comes directly up against what you believe to be true.
Yes, I'm holding on to that tightly.
I say this is religion. It doesn't matter if it works or not. This is your religion. My mother is not strong, and you are devoted to it.
So you're saying it's a practice, that I've made this my
absolutely.
Practice.
Absolutely.
My mantra.
And anytime you're around her, you look for all the ways she's not strong.
Yes, absolutely.
And that way you get to hold what you believe. Devoted to that religion, my mother is not strong.
And to be
and I
right
call
about
it.
Yes,
and I call it religion because there's no room for God in it. I know. And here's the proof. We worship
that.
What we believe.
Mm-hmm.
Now, my mother is strong. So, sweetheart, that's the turnaround. Now, give me three ways that your mother is strong.
My mother is strong.
You ignore her. You isolate from her.
Mm-hmm.
And does she call you anyway?
No.
Okay.
No, she doesn't.
So where is she strong in the face of that?
Well, she's strong with her other grandchildren. She loves them fiercely.
Good. So she's strong there. Okay,
yes.
That's one.
She's strong in getting up and going to work every day.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
You know, a lot of us cannot say that.
Yes, she is strong in
that. That's two.
And she's strong in her ability to want to learn.
Wow. That's amazing.
Mm-hmm.
Hmm. So just sit with that. You may call her and say, Mom, you know, I've just noticed how strong you are. And I really respect that strength around your grandchildren and, you know, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And you do this as a personal exercise.
Yes.
Yeah. And let's hear what else you've written.
That was it. Those were all the things that I had written.
Okay. So, honey, you are strong.
Yes.
Because you were up against it there.
Yes.
You blew your own mind. Yeah. And that will open you up. Next time you're with your mother, you might find an entirely different experience.
Thank you, Katie.
Thank you, Susan.
Thank you, Susan. I would like to ask, what can we keep working on the same thing over? I mean, once we've done one session, and this is just one session with this, can Susan, maybe it'll come up for her again, and is that all right? And
just, well, you know, it's going back to this. This is her religion. It's a religious internal war. I believe nothing. I would rather be open, and in that openness, life is so beautiful. I don't bother superimposing stories up on the beauty of it. Why would I do that? It would only diminish it. And because I understand people's stories, because there are no new stressful thoughts, they're all recycled. They come in and out in any language in the world. You know, I travel all over the world, and there are no new stressful thoughts. So we question those, and that is the end of this war with ourselves, the war with reality, the war with God.
So this might be an opening for Susan or Jeffrey or myself, and then we keep working with the questions, and we expect to be free, more free.
Well, you know, like Susan, the next time she has the thought, my mother is not strong, she may just smile. Because she has blown her...
Yes.
She has blown her identity. I am the woman whose mother is not strong. She's blown it. You know, you cannot ever believe it again.
Quite the same way.
That's right. That's the power of truth.
Yes, especially, and also being witnessed in it. I know that you say that we can do this work alone, but I also see the power in being able to say it out loud to another and having them hear you say, like, here are the three ways my mother is strong, or here are the three ways I can...
And it has to be genuine, because if you don't believe it, it's just, it's like air. You know, the work is like, it's like you're walking through the desert, you're terrified of rattles, snakes, and you look down on the ground, and in front of you is this great big rattlesnake, and you jump back, you're terrified, your brow is sweating, your heart is beating, and you look again, and you come to see it was just a rope. You think, oh my goodness, that was just a rope. So then I invite you to stand over that rope for 1,000 years and make yourself afraid of it. You cannot. It's not possible, because what you have realized, the power of realizing for yourself what is true, it cannot be done. So,
yes. Oh, Katie, thank you.
Yes, the mind.
One last thought.
Yes, these concepts we're dealing with, those are the snakes. And until you can see their ropes, our work's not done, because fear is just the experience to let us know we're out of balance.
Byron, Katie, thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Justine.
I've been speaking with Byron Katie. She's a co-author of Loving What Is, and you may check her website to find out the events that she is part of and her travels. And there are a lot of free downloads that you can get from the website, and you can check that out at www.thework.org.